You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks. We are here to talk all about the Legion of Superheroes, one of my favorite team comics. And actually, I think other than like the kid comics, it was my first real genre into superhero stuff. Other than, you know, when you looked at, you know, the Super Friends and such, this was the series that actually I started collecting as a kid and have never stopped until DC forced me to. So it was actually pretty cool to do, and we've got a great crew to talk all about it. But first and foremost, let me welcome my co-host for this week. Let's say hey to Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
Whoa, that's a strong howdy. Is that getting prepared for Dragon Con, sir?
Absolutely. I got to, you know, practice the pipes because they'll probably only last till Friday.
Wow.
Yeah, well, you know, it's Dragon Con. So by, you know, and Thursday is the new Saturday. So I'm pretty sure that by Saturday afternoon, I'll be needing to a lozenge. Let's put it that way.
A lozenge called Darren's apple pie?
Well, you know, that might help, yes.
And speaking of Mr. Apple Pie himself, let's welcome Darren.
What? How do I get these nicknames? I don't know why these nicknames come to me.
You earn them, my friend.
Oh, well, then I'll wear it with pride, as I always do. How are you? What's going on?
Gee, it's called Dragon Con, man.
I know, right?
Oh,
what's up with that?
I know. Yeah. Well, you brought a friend along with you tonight.
Well, he wouldn't say he's a friend because it's Paul. Paul and I are podcast husbands.
It's true.
Much like you and Gordon are. So, you know.
Mm-hmm. Bros in the field.
Bros, yeah. Bros.
Bros. Wow, you just made it sound totally douchey.
Then my job is done.
Victory.
Victory is mine, I say.
Oh, my
God. So we have Paul French with us. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
This is your first foray into the station. Welcome aboard.
Yes, yes. It's very nice in here.
Uh-huh. Well, it's great. And it's great to have you. And it's great to have a nice, just casual conversation about a nice group of comics that we all like, and you know, nothing too stressful because this is Dragon Con weekend. So
yes. Start
kicking back and chilling with some good comic talks.
Absolutely. Yes.
I know not what you're talking about.
Hey, Darren, has Paul ever made it to Dragon Con?
Nope.
No.
It's very far away.
And they have Fan Expo at the same time we have Dragon Con.
Oh, that's true. He's one of those.
He's a Canuck.
He's the one we have to build the other wall for. Got it. Okay.
Hey, if it goes a certain way, we're building the damn wall.
And I don't blame you.
And I'm planning on being on the other side of that wall, too.
I'll be Wile E. Coyote-ing the shit. I'll be in, like, the big, you know, slingshot, walking backwards from, like, Lake Ontario. So I can shot myself safely all the way into Quebec.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, you've seen the pictures of the people trying to escape the Middle East on the rafts. You'll be seeing people trying to escape the U.S. from the raft. They're all heading towards Toronto.
Dear Lord, let Nate Silva be right. Thank thee. Okay.
We've all got to get to Tim Hortons. Come on.
Ah, yes.
Coffee.
You need your Timmies.
Yeah. It's, Yeah, it's there's some addictive substance in that stuff. Let me tell you.
Mm. Oh, trust me, I was sugar. Real sugar, not artificial. Yeah. Exactly. What I think I hit, I was in Toronto in July. In July, I think every day I think I hit Tim's at least twice.
Nice.
Yeah. So it was pretty awesome. I found each time a new one too. It's like it's not. Oh, like,
dude. If you miss one, you'll hit 10 more in a few seconds.
Exactly.
And especially if you're in Toronto, it's literally, you know, you can take that empty cup and throw it over your shoulder, and you'll hit a completely different Tim Hortons.
Exactly.
We have that here in Atlanta. We call it Waffle House.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, exactly. All you have to do is ask for the Waffle House on Peachtree. There's at least 20 of them.
And there's one at every interstate exit. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And they all have the same menu, the same waitresses, the same cooks. It's kind of freaky, actually. It's
the same film of grease on every surface. Yeah.
Even the menus have grease on it.
Exactly.
It's awesome. Oh boy, before we digress, we want to hear from you guys at home. If you guys want to jump in with your opinions of what food choices you should go for, please write us esopodcast@gmail.com, or you could call us at 404-963-9057. Of course, the show is brought to you by, I hate to say the sponsor, the fine folks at the Amazon.com store. And, you know, they're like going, why the hell are we sponsoring these guys? But they are, you know, they've been great to us. And, you know, you guys have been doing some back to school shopping. I've been seeing our numbers. Thank you so much. You know, school has started down here almost a month already. And, you know, I know other parts of the country and the world, they're going back in the first part of September. So it's going to be, you know, it's never too early or too late to keep on doing some shopping. You know what? I'm going to go out and say it. Start your holiday shopping now. That's right, folks. Start shopping through the ESO Amazon store.
And by holiday, he means Halloween.
If you want to say. I was thinking something with the big guy in the red outfit, but that's okay. And sure. I don't mean the big red S. So
we'll talk about.
Oh, so we're talking Captain Marvel.
Exactly, the big red cheese.
Big red cheese. Yeah.
But yes, you can find a link to the Amazon.com site right from ESOPodcast.com, and yes, you can click on that. And if you bookmark that, you can actually then help support the station every time you go to that bookmark, and it does not cost you a dime extra from what you have on those Amazon prices. We just get a nice little cut for it. So it's actually pretty cool. And, you know, that way we can get Mike a new Hawaiian shirt. It's pretty darn awesome. So with that being said, let's get started with this week's rants and raves. And man, this one was tough. We had 2016 hit us below the belt this time, I think, folks. We lost Gene Wilder today. And for me, Gene is always Willy Wonka. You could have the remake made by Tim Burton, but nah. That was the first movie I ever went to see in the movie theaters. And this was tough for me because I've seen pretty much all the work he's done. And from everything from Bonnie and Clyde on up. And it's tough on this one. It's like losing your favorite uncle in some ways. What about you guys?
Yeah, for me, it's Gene Wilder is not only a comic genius, but a horror genius. Because the boat scene in Willy Wonka scared the crap out of me.
Still scares the hell out of me.
Oh my god. No, and I think people to this day think, oh yeah, we're gonna watch Willy Wonka, it's gonna be fun. And then they get to that and go, oh, that's right, that's in here.
Yeah, you don't want to take the kids.
And then they're like, oh, you know what, I'm gonna pop some popcorn and I'm gonna go to the bathroom, I'll be right back.
Is it raining? Is it snowing?
Right after it's over. It's like, oh wow, really? Yeah, but good on you, Gene. Good work, great actor. Miss
you. You know, and to me, he was kind of the voice of Mel Brooks for such a long time, and you know those movies that, you know, everything from, I mean, Young Frankenstein alone, just a phenomenal movie, and you know, and some of the stuff that he did later on, you know, I mean, he was a solid writer, an excellent director, as well as a performer, and you know, he. Did so much great work, and you know, and we hadn't seen him in a while, and you know,
now when I know why.
Well, when I heard the news today, I said to the friend that told me, I said, you know, I was just thinking the other week how it's been such a long time since we've seen him. And, you know, the last thing I remember was they did it on TCM. It was Alec Baldwin interviewing him. And that was the last thing I remember seeing. He put a book out shortly after that. But, you know, not seeing him perform I wondered if there was something up, and clearly that was the case.
Well, he was 83.
Yeah.
He had a good life. But it's interesting because with me, you know, he was the everyday guy in a lot of his movies. Like if you look at Silver Streak, or if you look even at Frisco Kid, or even, you know, or stuff like that, what he did with Richard Pryor.
I was going to say, he did four. Yeah.
But like, see no evil, yes. Hear no evil.
There's Stir Crazy. There's...
Yeah, We're Bad. Yeah, that's right. We're Bad.
Exactly. Silver Streak. There's Hear No Evil, See No Evil. And then Another You, I think. Something like that, right?
Yeah.
The last one. Nobody really remembers the last one, unfortunately. Every time I see him, I think of him. There's a smile on my face because whatever he did, whether he was the straight man or Richard Pryor, because he wasn't just like a straight man, because he was funny, like he held his own.
Oh, yeah.
Or whether he was a cocky gunslinger, or whether he was trying to frighten children because he was getting such a big kick out of it. That's the one thing about that scene. Yes, it's scary if you're from a child's point of view, but when you're watching it as an adult, he is getting so much pleasure freaking out these kids.
Oh, totally.
And it's hard not to enjoy it with him. Maybe that says more about me, but even in a movie like Woman in Red, right? He's like Mr. Sexy, but he's funny. He was able to take anything and make it better and make it funny. He's one of the two actors I point to that it is just so beautiful watching them get more and more frustrated. The more frustrated they get, the funnier they are. Gene Wilder and John Cleese are the two funniest, angriest character actors that I've ever seen. And it is a shame that we lost him, that 2016 took another great talent away from us, and he wasn't the only one this week, but probably the largest, certainly the most well known. But yes, the death toll continues.
Yeah. Mm.
Do you think 2016 is just a gigantic virtual reality version of Celebrity Death Note?
Ooh. You had to go there.
No, I'm just saying. It just seems like this year has been particularly heavy on celebrity death. Maybe it's just because we had like Prince and Bowie right off the bat, and we've been heightened to our sensitivity of it. But it just seems like this year has been extraordinarily rough.
And I wonder if part of that is just when you look at sort of the timing of a lot of sort of big pop cultural movements, that we're just getting to that stage where there just are a lot that are, you know, at that stage where it goes one way or the other, and just playing the numbers, you're going to get a lot there that are going to go the bad way. And I just think that, you know, we've got sort of like, you look at sort of that, you especially look for Wilder in sort of that, the mid to late 70s. As that super prime time of what he was doing. And that's the same can be said for Bowie. And a lot of these other guys, you know, they had sort of that heyday in the 70s, and they're getting to that stage where they're heading towards 70. And, you know, of course we just hear about the ones where it goes badly, but you know, the reality of it is that on the numbers, you know, you're just gonna have these waves of it.
Mm-hmm. True.
And it really strikes I think a chord even more with a lot of us, because you know there's so many of them like Wilder, that they don't make them like that anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like, you know, you can point to, and nor should you, but, you know, point to someone and say, well, there's another Gene Wilder, because there isn't. I mean, he was so exceptionally unique,
yeah,
in what he could do and yeah, how he could portray things, that it makes it even more of a loss, because there's no way you can replace that.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Exactly. And not, on top of the work he did in the movies, he also was huge doing charity, mm-hmm, with his Gilda's Club stuff. Because for a lot of people didn't know that he was married to Gilda Radner. And that, you know, when she got sick with cancer, that they started basically a charity called Gilda's Club, and they did it to different cities, mm-hmm, and it provided social and emotional support program for men, women, teens, and children living with cancer in a non-residential setting. And it's just amazing the work he did with that, especially after she passed.
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, you look at, how many of them are out there, and the work that they do is incredible.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, because I know my mom was involved with that when she came down with cancer. Mm. And so it's amazing to, you know, the things they did for it and how much work he did towards that. That's also why you stopped seeing him do a lot of film, mm-hmm, in the later years, because he was focusing on that. And so, and also his writing, because, mm-hmm, you know, a lot of people don't realize he wrote Young Frankenstein. Mm. And, you know, he went to, he originally wasn't even going to be Mel Brooks. It was, but he wanted Mel as the director. But, and that's why it's known now as a Mel Brooks film, but it was, mm-hmm, it was a, you know, Gene Wilder film. And, you know, he came up with the whole concept of it. So it's just amazing to, you know, how much talent he had.
Yeah.
And, you know, he will be missed. You know, it's like one, like I said at the beginning, he always felt like that uncle you always had, saw, you know, every once in a while. But when you did, it felt like you saw him. Yes. It was just yesterday you saw him. And it always felt like that with all of his roles he played, and, you know, anything from the producers, anything to, you know, what Women in Red. And, you know, it's just awesome. Mm-hmm. So it's just, he was great. And, you know, he'll be missed. So, you know, live on, my friend. Hopefully you and Gilda are together now, and we will be back in a moment.
Where are you headed, cowboy?
Nowhere special.
Nowhere special. I always wanted to go there.
Come on.
If this were some tavern tale, all half-truth and senseless adventure.
And it's full of demons.
And it's full of demons.
'Twas disastrous.
It's coming, people. It's coming.
Pitchforks, get your pitchforks here. Can't kill a demon without your pitchforks.
Torches and pitchforks. No defense. You better defend yourself.
No matter how you spend your life, your wit will defend you more often than a sword. Keep it sharp. Have I got you.
I gotta practice my killing.
Let the wicked hear my voice and tremble.
Fly, you fool. Fly.
You have to pick a side. You stay on your path or you cross over to me.
I wanted to get inside so badly I could taste it.
Upon him I will visit famine and a fire, till all around him desolation rings, and all the demons in the outer dark look on amazed and recognize that vengeance is the business of a man.
Caster Quest, now on the ESO Network.
ESO, ESO.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Now we're here with Michael Valentine. Welcome, sir.
Hey, how you doing today?
Welcome to the station. It's great to have you here. For those listeners who may not be familiar with you, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, again, I'm Michael Valentine. I'm the director of an awesome documentary called Comics Beyond the Comic Book Pages. It's an independent feature film about the world of comic books, told through the thoughts and images of artists, creators, writers, fans, publishers, comic book store owners, and it's a pretty awesome film. It's pretty fun and inspirational. I have people in it like Stan Lee, Frank Miller, Neil Adams, Mark Waid, Mark Silvestri, John Romita Jr., and the list just goes on and on and on.
Absolutely, and it looks exciting. And for those listeners out there, it's Comics with an X, C-O-M-I-X. Mm-hmm. And we'll give all the pertinent information about online and where you can find it and everything. But I'm kind of curious, how did this start? How long did it take you to make the documentary?
Well, you know, I've always loved comic books. You know, I grew up in the 70s, and all I wanted to do was draw John Romita's Spider-Man and Neil Adams' Batman. And the stuff looked really cool. And about 13 years ago, I had a vision to make a comic book from a treatment I wrote. And, you know, I realized it wasn't so easy to do that. You know, you have to find the right artist to help you tell the story you're trying to tell. And then one day I had an epiphany. I wanted to film the process of making a comic book. And I've been working on this film for 13 years. So back in 2004 is when I wanted to start to do that. And just that idea grew into what comics became. I went to conventions. I interviewed people at comic book stores. And I was transformed to this super cool world that I had never seen before, where you could meet artists and creators, and you could pick their brains. You could get autographs. You know, there was fans dressed up in their costumes. And the fans, you know, at these conventions, they don't get judged. And I kind of knew at that point that that's what I wanted to do.
Very cool. And yes, there is a, yeah, I mean, it is definitely a medium that's worthy of a documentary, a closer look at it. Because I don't think a lot of people realize, you're right, how much work goes into it. Many of our listeners know I'm an independent comic book maker myself, and it is extremely difficult, even for the big companies.
Oh yeah. And I learned so much making the film about that. I mean, I thought I knew, and you know, when you really get into it, and you realize that everything depends on the person before you. So if one person's late on something, all of a sudden the next person's late. And then if you're working for a Marvel or a DC or a Vertigo or an Image where you have to deal with deadlines, it can be pretty brutal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, apart from that, once you set out to make the documentary, sort of a look at the industry, what are some of the other things that you found just sort of surprising? Because you were a longtime fan. So the more you got to know it, I'm sure there were things that were like, oh goodness, that I had no idea.
Well, that's, you know, it's actually a great question. And, you know, I think one of the main things I learned is about collaboration and how important that is. And, you know, whether you're making a film or you're making a comic book or whatever you're making that is a collaborative medium, like what we do, just learning how to work together and how the art of collaboration and people, you know, who are talented artists and talented writers can work together. And, you know, interviewing some of the, you know, best names in comics, you know, Stan Lee and Neil Adams and Mark Waid and all these guys. I was like a kid, you know, and I was on the edge of my seat with every word they spoke. And I learned so much. I mean, to be honest with you, this 13 years is a great ride for me because I learned so much about comic books and making comic books, about the publishing part, you know, about comic book stores and how they run and how artists work and their style is specific and fans and their costumes and, you know, making their costumes and how, you know, people don't really realize that, you know, they think, oh, these fans, they just get together and they have these costumes. But a lot of times what it takes to make those costumes, people don't realize. And those some of the things that I tried to delve into in the film. And a lot of the things in the film were learning things for me too. One of the things that I learned when I was interviewing Neil Adams is about how he pretty much gave Frank Miller a start. And most people don't may or may not know that. I didn't know that.
Right.
And so I'm talking to Neil, you know, and we get in the subject of Frank Miller because of Batman and how Frank Miller's Batman was heavily influenced by Neil's Batman. And all of a sudden, Neil started telling this story about, you know, Frank came up to him and asked him, you know, to give him a break and to review his portfolio. And Neil Adams was telling him, you know, give it up, move back to Vermont. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in that room at that time.
Well, and, you know, I mean, obviously you had access and got access to some of the biggest names. And that's, you know, marquee stuff right there. Anybody who's interested in comics, I mean, you've got a veritable who's who of people that you're talking to. And what's great also, I think even furthermore, is that on the DVD, there's extended versions of those interviews. So they're not just, you know, your typical sound clip bits that you get all the time, especially from Stan. I mean, it sounds like you really went thorough one-on-one with him.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's so funny because Stan was actually one of the easier interviews to land. And I really thought, you know, okay, when you want to sit down and talk to him, it's like, okay, what do I talk about? What do I ask him? And, you know, when I started back in 2004, there weren't a lot of documentaries on comic books. Stan had done some stuff obviously prior, but so when I sat down with him, I wanted to talk about a lot of things. And for me, it was really important for the fans to be able to, you know, get the stuff that's in the film, because when you put a film together, and I had over 400 hours of footage that I had to go through to pick, you know, 85 minutes, and I'm the director. If it was up to me, it would have been like a 3-hour film, you know? but luckily I had a really good editor who helped me really fine tune what, you know, the story that I wanted to tell. But I wanted to make sure the fans, because I'm a fan too, and I would geek out about this stuff, that I wanted to make sure when I released the DVD that I wanted to make it special, and I wanted to make it really special for them and the geeks like me to this kind of stuff. So the DVD release includes the 85-minute movie. It has 4 hours of bonus footage. It's got the whole Stan Lee interview on it. It's got the whole Frank Miller interview on it, plus 2 hours of a lot of extra nuggets that just didn't, you know, we couldn't put in the film. And it also includes a really cool comic book that I co-created with an artist named Paul Limgenko and Julian Aquino, who helped me kind of flesh out the story. And it's so funny because originally that's how the idea of the film came about, that I wanted to do a comic book. And, you know, now I actually get to do the comic book for the DVD, and it's kind of like a dream come true.
I was going to say, that's pretty awesome. So you did get that comic made after all.
Yeah, we had 2 weeks to do it.
Wow.
But, yeah, the distributor of the DVD said, well, I told him, I want to do something special. I've got this bonus footage, but I want to come up with something else that's only available on the DVD. And that's the thing with the bonus footage. It's the only place you're going to find it. Because I wanted to give I wanted to give the fans something special. So when the comic book idea came around, they said, well, that's a great idea, but we have to have the comic book in, you know, drawn, inked, everything in 2 weeks. And I'm like, holy shit, 2 weeks. Okay. And as you know, if you know, because, you know, making a comic book and how long that can take.
Oh, yeah.
But, again, I'm really proud of it. And sometimes the best work is stuff that, you know, you have to just really do really fast. Sometimes that's some of the best stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, very cool. Well, how can people get to see the movie?
Well, there's many ways. They can go on to, you know, it's available, the DVD, and also downloads. You can do a digital download on iTunes and Sony PlayStation and pretty much any avenue where video downloads are available. And then the DVD is available on like Target, Walmart, Amazon.com. They can even go on my website and buy it from there. It's pretty much in every outlet. It's not really in too many stores. Some of the smaller stores may have it. I'm actually working with Diamond right now, and we're trying to get the film into comic book stores as well. So it may be available in their local comic book store, and if it's not, tell them that they should have it.
Awesome. Well, that would make sense for it to be there, of all places.
Right, right.
Well, very cool. Well, we'll definitely we'll make sure to have it available in our Amazon store that we have on the podcast so that people can go right there and we'll click a link to be able to get that. And I see Mike is over there. The chair beckons. So it needs a feeding. So it's time.
It's Mike, always time, Mike. You know that.
It really is.
It
you
is
guys have
always
some, like, music for this, like dun 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 dun.
Imagine that in your head, and it'll be perfect.
Exactly.
So I think you got it going there. All right, Mike, strap the poor boy down.
He is all in there.
All right, you know. It likes feeding on documentarians the most, anyway.
Uh-oh.
It's the most material that they could get.
He's our second one this month.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that pretty cool?
That's awesome.
The rotting skeleton and the other one's still waiting.
Exactly.
And I think we're supposed to have Michael Moore next month, so it's perfect.
Wow.
Right.
It likes Michaels, so it's good. All right, Mike. Are you ready to get Michael started?
Absolutely.
God, this is confusing. Michael. Yeah.
I know.
We just call you Hey You. All right. Mr. Valentine.
There we go. I like that one.
What was your favorite geek out moment?
Oh my gosh. There's been so many in my life. That's such a good question. But I would have to say meeting my all-time hero, Stan Lee, at Comic-Con 2004. I just started shooting the film. And I'm just walking around the convention. And back then, Stan was actually approachable. He was standing on the side of one of the convention halls getting ready to do a panel. And he was just standing there talking to somebody. And I just kind of walked up to him and I shook his hand and I said, you know, thank you so much just for inspiring me and inspiring so many people to want to create and, you know, be creative. And it's actually, there's a little clip in the film of that. It's a very quick clip, but it's of that moment when I got to meet him and he was just so cool. He's like, thank you very much. No problem. And he smiled and he asked me my name and he was like, seemed very interested in me. And then
he called security, right?
Yeah, really. And then 2 years later interviewing him for my film. So I would have to say that's probably my favorite geek out moment.
That's hard to beat. Sitting then down and talking to Stan for an hour, that's right up there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm almost curious to hear this next one, though, for you. What was your most disappointing geek out moment?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and here's the thing. I mean, when you're making a film, you have a lot of positives and a lot of negatives. You have a lot of things that go right and a lot of things that go wrong. And this is something that almost was the most disappointing, but it's going to be a positive. So basically the answer is I almost not getting the opportunity to interview Frank Miller due to his last minute possible cancellation. So basically I'll try to make this story really quick is, you know, Frank Miller's not that easy to get. He's kind of reclusive and he didn't know who I was. He's like, well, what do you want to interview me for? Blah, 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 blah. So I spent 6 months working on his assistant, you know, and, you know, aggravating her to no end, you know, wanting to interview him. And finally, you know, she goes, okay, Frank can do an interview, but you got to be here next week. And this is in New York. I'm based in LA. So she goes, you got to come next week and you got an hour. And I'm like, holy crap. Okay. So I get my camera guy and he had to take the day off from work. I had to take the day off from work because it was like a Tuesday in the afternoon or something. So I got the tickets to Manhattan. And the day before, she called me and she said, Frank can't do it.
Ah!
I'm like, no, please don't make it so. And I started like freaking out. And I was very disappointed. I was like, and the lady's name is Hildy. And I said, Hildy, if there's any way, I've already got the tickets. I paid for the tickets. You know, we've been trying to make this happen. And within the 6 months, there was tons where he said yes. And then a month later, he'd go, oh, he can't do it now. He's too busy. And then, you know, I just had to be persistent. But the last minute, I just told her, I said, if you any way you can make it happen, please. And so she goes, let me talk to Frank. And so she talked to Frank and she called me back. She said, okay, you got to be here, you know, like about it was like 1:30 in the afternoon and he'll give you an hour. So we get there and we get to his loft in Manhattan, which in itself is pretty an amazing place. I mean, I just wandered around there. It's like a museum for art and for samurai stuff. And I mean, it's just a pretty amazing place. And I meet him, you know, and he's kind of intimidating. You know, when you first meet him, I had never talked to him. I had never, you know, we never had any correspondence, you know, personally. And he just gives me this smirk like, how you doing? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, well, I only have a half hour. And I'm like, holy crap, we haven't even set up the lighting or anything. So anyway, we finally get everything set up and we ended up talking for over almost an hour and a half on camera. So
that's awesome. Yeah, once you get once you got him started, it was no problem, right?
Well, yeah. Once you get any of them started, it's and you know that's what I love. I mean, what I loved most about this film is I learned so much, and it was just me kind of asking the questions, or when they start talking about it, you know, kind of keep to having them talk about a certain subject, and you just be surprised what kind of things come out.
Oh, of course, that is awesome. What geeks you out the most?
Oh my gosh. Well, comic books for sure. I love old toys, you know, anything from like old G.I. Joes and, you know, some of the old superhero stuff, Super Friends toys, Evel Knievel. My wife bought me this cool Evel Knievel motorcycle that had the little thing that you rev up and it goes, you know, and I used to have one of those as a kid, and you know, my wife got me one of those. I love the Muppets. I'm a big Jim Henson fan, and I love guitars. I'm a big I don't collect guitars, but I play guitar, and I love just, you know, the vintage guitars.
That is cool. What turns your geek off though?
When I have to sleep. When I have to not be able to just be a geek whenever I want, you know? So when I sleep is when I turn my geek off.
What is this sleep you speak of?
Yeah. Well, I'm actually getting some now, which is great.
Wow. You have to tell us about it sometime.
Yeah, really.
What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
You know, that's a good question. There's so many. I mean, I was thinking about this question and I had this list, and it's like, God, pinpoint it down to one. It's always, it's kind of like, you know, when someone says, what's your favorite song or what's your favorite comic book or what, and it's really difficult, but I think it'd probably be Spider-Man, because it was one of the first characters that I really was exposed to that I remember. I mean, Bugs Bunny was pretty awesome, but I think Spider-Man, and you know, he always had that look. He looked cool. I love the way he moved around. You know, he got around with the shooting the webs, and just, you know, and he's kind of a smart ass little kid. You're a young kid, or a young man actually. And he had, you know, normal problems like we all had. And I always loved the way that John Romita, actually one of my favorite artists because of that time, how he drew him. So I would probably say Spider-Man.
Oh, he's friendly.
Well, he is your friendly neighborhood guy.
Exactly. You know.
So.
What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
Oh, man. I would have to say the Joker.
Number one answer on the show.
I can imagine.
He's popular, man.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, the guy scares the shit out of me. I don't care if he's from the TV show back in the 60s. Or up to the latest Jokers, you know, that character just scares the out of me.
Okay, which version of the Joker, though?
Like comic book related or movie?
Whichever. There's so many different versions.
Killing Joke, maybe, that era.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a pretty severe one.
Yeah, it's you know, and as far as the movies, probably the most recent Dark Knight. I just think that those, you know, because again, there was this, you know, he's laughing and but he's so dark and morbid and just, I don't know, something creepy about it, no matter what.
Oh, sure. That makes total sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
Oh, you added pose. I like that. That's good. 'Cause
we like to keep you on your toes, man.
Well, you know, it's so funny because I don't really have a geek word. I mean, maybe, you know, sometimes you don't notice. Maybe someone else says, you know, you always say that. But what I do have a geek is I always put my thumbs up. Whenever I'm taking pictures with somebody, I do the Fonzie thumbs up, you know. Hey. So I don't necessarily have a phrase, but it's probably the Fonzie thumbs up is my geek thing.
Okay. No.
That's so cool.
That's awesome. We'll just have to change your name to Fonzarelli. What is your ideal geek occupation?
You know what? I'm doing it. I get to interview some of the most interesting, talented, awesome people on the planet. I get to go to the coolest places, meet the coolest people, fans. I mean, the fans of comic books are some of the coolest people. And just to talk to them and pick their brains about what they love, I couldn't ask for a better occupation.
Yep, I do agree with that one. Mm-hmm. What geek occupation, though, wouldn't you like to do?
I wouldn't like to be a janitor after a Comic-Con and clean up all the the mess.
That's our number two answer on the show, actually.
Oh, really?
Oh, God, yeah.
That would just be, like, no fun.
If you ever have a chance, check out Bob and Carl's The Sci-Fi Janitors.
Okay. I've heard of them.
Mm-hmm. They're favorites on the show, and they fit the bill perfectly.
Oh, man, I bet. I bet. That just, you know, I mean, it can't be fun.
Oh, the things you find.
Oh, I'm sure.
The pieces of costumes you find.
And I'm sure. I'm sure that's not the most weird things you find, but I'm sure you can find all kinds of things.
Oh, you have no idea. Okay, sir, are you ready for your final question?
I am.
What is your ultimate geek fantasy?
Oh, my gosh. I think to keep making films about geek and pop culture phenomenons. I want to just continue my passion doing that. And that would be like if I could do it for a living. And if this film does well and I'm successful and I'm blessed to do another one, I'm going to keep doing this. And I think that's what I would love to be able to have as an ultimate geek fantasy.
That doesn't sound bad to us.
Not to me either.
Mr. Michael Valentine, you have made it through the Geek Seat.
Woo-hoo!
Congratulations. Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young man what he's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $60.06.
Ha-ha!
Yes, nice. But only on the station. That's the little asterisk we have next to it.
Do you guys know that I'm doing some screenings of the film too, right?
Yeah. What is it on tour?
It's, you know, what the thing is it's kind of, it kind of is. I've always, you know, one of my things was I always wanted to bring comics, the experience to the big screen, and making them events and having contests, special guests, that kind of thing, you know, just make it a great place to gather for fans to express what they love. So I'm working with a company called Tug, and they're a web-based platform that lets anybody in the country, it could be an organization or a podcast, it could be even a fan, and they can choose to have the movie played in a local theater in their town. And basically what happens is they become the host. And how it works is that basically, you just have to sell so many tickets for the screening to make this screening happen. And we're doing one. We have one coming up. We're doing one here in LA in October. We're doing one in Bismarck. There's another podcast doing one, and there's one in Kansas City. So it's actually pretty cool because, again, I mean, you know, this film really is a fun film for people to watch together and interact and just be together in a room sharing something they love with a bunch of people that love the same thing.
Absolutely. Well, definitely. So where can people find out more about that and the screenings as well as how to get it on DVD and all that?
Well, for the screenings, they can go to a website called Tug, tug.com. That's T-U-G-G.com. And if they type in the title Comics Beyond the Comic Book Pages, they will find it there, and it'll basically tell them how, if they want to host their own screening. It's also on the comics website, comicsthemovie.com. under theater events. They just click on that tab and you go right there. So there's many ways to find that, and they can see if there's actually one going on in their area, or if they want to bring it to their town, they can. And again, the DVD is available at Amazon, on Amazon.com, Target.com, Walmart.com, BarnesandNoble.com. It's pretty much, I mean, every time I turn around, there's a new place that's available, which is great. And then there's also the download, the digital download of the film that's available like iTunes and Sony PlayStation. But the DVD, I'm really proud of that because of all the extras it has.
Absolutely. And it does sound very good. And congratulations for finishing the journey of the documentary, because I'm sure it was not easy, but it looks like it was well worth it.
Oh, man. Thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, 13 years, it was I didn't realize it. Didn't realize when you first start something, you don't realize how long it's going to take. And like a couple of years into it, I almost gave up. But once I had Stan Lee's interview, I knew that I had something and I knew I had to finish it. So it was like, no matter what happens, I'm going to finish this film. And that's what I did.
Absolutely. Well, it's been great having you on the show. And when you get to the next one, feel free to come back anytime. You are welcome, sir.
Why, thank you, Mike. And Mike.
Awesome, Mike. It was great talking to you, Mike.
Oh, it's great talking to you guys. Okay. Thank you guys so much, ESO Podcast. I appreciate it.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment when we talk all about the Legion of Superheroes.
Ooh, I'm going to stay tuned for that.
Welcome back, my friends. We are here to talk about one of my favorite superhero groups ever. And we are going to have a great crew to talk all about the Legion of Substitute Heroes. Oh, wait, that's these guys' podcast. Let's welcome to the show Darren and Paul from, like I said, the previous mentioned Legion of Substitute Podcasters. Welcome.
Thank you, everybody.
And hello.
So tell us. You guys have been doing the podcast now for how long?
Oh, gosh. Well, my daughter just turned 7, and I seem to recall announcing her impending birth on the show.
God, I remember that.
Yeah, right?
Yeah,
so it's been just – it'll be 8 years in October.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And I thought our 6.5 has been long.
Every week.
An episode every week. Yeah, there's been an episode up every week in that time. And as I say to my wife, it's like I have 411 or 412 weeks in a row. I'm not letting this be the one where I mess it up.
Truth.
You don't want to break the streak.
Exactly. Oh, I will not.
Awesome. So let's start back and everything. What is, what's your history with the Legion? Why did you guys get into it?
Paul tells a story better than me.
Well, as far as the starting of the of my fandom of the Legion, it probably predates Darren's by a couple of years, so I will start. But for me, it was remember when you were growing up as a kid, you'd go to the barbershop to get a haircut and they would have a bunch of comic books where the covers had been torn off?
Oh, sure.
Right. And so clearly someone was supposed to return them and ended up selling them for a few bucks to the barbershop at the other end of the mall. And so I found one that had, it was one of the 100-page giants, and it had a reprinting of the story where with the adult Legion. And so I had read a little bit of that, and of course, more than the cover was missing from it by the time I got to it, so I hadn't read the whole story. And then they had you guys might remember these as well, but they used to have, they would do like these sort of mass market size paperbacks that would have sort of two panels on each page, and they'd reprint certain comics. So at the time, there was a Superman one, and there was a Superboy in the Legion of Superheroes. Now, I was a big fan of Superboy because, you know, it's like, hey, it's like Superman, but he's my age. Actually, he was a bit older at that point, but that's, I digress. And this particular issue had him flying on an angle with a whole bunch of other superheroes. And I thought, well, this is the best value for my money, because that book only has one guy on it. This one has like 30. So I got that book, and it had a couple of... some really oddly chosen reprints, quite honestly. And that kind of got me into the, wow, these guys are really interesting. And then eventually I saw one of the books on the newsstand. It was issue 256, which came out right around the time also of their appearance in DC Comics Presents. And so with those, I thought, well, I want to know more about this team. And so I started collecting then. And then Superboy left, and for a little while, so did I.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I came back late. I came back a little bit later because Pat Broderick was doing the art, and I was a big Micronauts fan.
Oh, sure. Of course.
And so, I loved Pat Broderick on Micronauts, and then I heard he was going to be doing Legion of Superheroes, so I thought, well, I'm going to check out the Legion again. And so I picked up the issue, one of the issues that he had drawn, and it turns out that I wasn't the only person who thought that issue would be one to pick up.
Dun dun dun.
Segue
it's
that.
It's true.
Okay.
I had picked up the very same issue. It was Legion of Superheroes number 286, Old Friends, New Relatives, and Other Corpses. And it was a beautiful cover by Pat Broderick. It had Dr. Regulus wrestling with Sunboy and several other Legionnaires unconscious in the background. I was like, ooh, this looks like fun, and it's only 60 cents. So, hey, buy it.
For 60 cents, it was a bargain.
It was a bargain back then. So, and then my fate was sealed at that point. I was
that is awesome.
Man. So, yeah.
What about you? What about Mikey?
My first Legion book, 226, The Dazzling Debut of Dawnstar.
Nice.
Written by Paul Levitz, and a beautiful cover with Mike Grell, by Mike Grell.
Iron Mike.
And who's going to be at Dragon Con? I should dig that out, see if I can
sign it.
Get that signed, yeah.
But then I was kind of spotty with getting those with the issues after that, and I do remember getting, I think the next really time when I was kind of into them was, and I say kind of because we're on, you know, with two experts, so my knowledge is just casual at best, but during, I guess it was the 80s with a run by Jerry Conway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure.
And yeah. I think I just read recently, or just found out recently, that Steve Ditko did a lot of the art there.
Yes,
he did.
So I got to dig those back up because I was totally unaware that was the Spider-Man guy when I was reading it back then.
And Perez covers too.
Yeah. Now, just to warn you though, it is not Ditko's finest hour.
Oh no! You remember that guy who had the cowboy hat and the
Dr. Maya Vale.
Yeah, the white perm. Yes, that's awesome. Yeah. All right, for me, I'm going to go a little bit further back.
Nice.
All right, let's go back to the age of Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes, 195.
Wow.
The first appearance of first of Erg.
Yes, that's Erg right.
One.
That's right. And I thought it was the coolest thing in the world that someone was trying out to be a superhero, but if he used his powers, he would die.
Yeah.
And I had never seen anything like that before. And back then, you know, I didn't know what a comic shop was. It was 7-Eleven, or it was Drug Fair, or Giant Food, or whatever. And so we used to go to the comics, up to the 7-Elevens, buy comics and trade them with each other. Uh-huh. And it was they sometimes had not the newest comics on the racks and stuff. So I picked up that issue of Superboy, but then I also picked up an issue of Superboy number 203, where it had one of these Legionnaires will die in this issue.
Yeah.
And he did.
And he did. And he did. They killed this character named Invisible Kid. And it was awesome. Yeah. That was Dave Cockrum doing the artwork.
That's right. And it was like nothing you were seeing at the time.
No, it was amazing because, you know, friends of mine had shown me some of like Neil Adams' work and stuff like that. And this was all these other teenage superheroes.
Yeah.
And I was probably 8 or 9 at the time.
And we lost Cockrum to the X-Men.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it was
stupidity.
It was just amazing. And then I was hooked from that point on, and I picked up every issue since. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then I started collecting, going back and getting the old Adventure Comics. And, you know, when I discovered comic shops and shows and stuff, and I had a run from Adventure Comics, I think, probably from when Lightning Lad fought the Space Whale.
Oh, yes.
All the way up for a while.
Poor space whales. They never got anywhere.
No, exactly.
They got love.
And it was just awesome stuff because it was Superman as a kid.
Yeah.
And his friends. And it was just awesome. And I, you know, remember being excited when they came out with the pocket-sized Legion of Superheroes comic. And it had all the new costumes that designed by George Perez.
Mm-hmm.
In it, and it showed like Timberwolf not looking like a animal anymore, and you know Karate Kid still had that big high collar. Oh,
well, hashtag Marvel letter suing for Wolverine.
Exactly.
So yeah, even though Timberwolf was around years before,
yeah,
the Canuck was so
exactly. So, but it was interesting. So you know, what is the history of the Legion? Because I know they started in the late 50s.
They did. They're one of the first superheroes in the, I guess we call them a Silver Age group, even though they were kind of in that bizarre no man's land between Golden Age and Silver Age when only Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, and a few others were being published.
Well, it depends. Like, if you look at when the Silver Age started, you know, a lot of people will say Showcase 4.
Flash, Showcase 4, yeah.
Showcase 4, and so that was 56. And so so they were April 1958. Okay. But people talk about that as a hard line, but it's not.
No, it's not.
Right. It's such a sliding scale across the board. But you know, around then you were starting to get more of these characters, cuz like Green Lantern wasn't for another couple of years. So but the interesting thing is there had been another story, sort of a similar thing, about 11 issues before, because you know this is in the Weisinger era when it was like our audience refreshes every 12 months, so you know you can just use the same story ideas again.
Yeah.
Oh sure.
Yeah, and so the creators of the series were Otto Binder and Al Plastino. Uh-huh. And they are notable for creating another character that everyone knows and loves, and that's Supergirl.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean the number of things that the two of those guys created
is insane.
Because you think of like remember this was a part of the Superman family of books, so they were writing some stories for Superman, they were writing some stories for Adventure Comics, and in fact. I don't think Binder ever wrote another Legion story after the first one.
Really?
Because
I remember because they looked quite different than what they did. People got used to looking at them.
Like, oh, absolutely, absolutely, and we'll get to that because you know Darren, he's got everything down with the super fashion.
Fashion police has arrived.
Otto Binder was a guy who you know he wrote a whole bunch of Captain Marvel stories, like you know with the Marvel family and everything. The number of things that we owe to that man's imagination crazy, you know, with where he worked on a lot of the stories of, you know, Bullet Man and Captain Marvel and the whole Marvel family.
Paul,
and
hold that thought for 1 second. Yeah. Let me explain to the people at home, when he mentions Captain Marvel, he doesn't mean Carol Danvers.
No. We mean Shazam.
Shazam.
Exactly. The true Captain Marvel.
Which, if you're a true comic book fan, you say that word every day, just in case.
Exactly.
Yeah, because you never know.
You never know.
But yeah, and I mean, you know, he created tons of characters for DC, including Crypto, the Phantom Zone, that's Otto Binder, Lucy Lane, Beppo the Super Monkey, Titano the Super Ape, the Jimmy's Signal Watch. Jimmy as Elastic Lad, who would, of course, later become an honorary member of the Legion. Just tons of stuff that is owed to him. And with Plastino, of course, like we say, I mean, Supergirl. That was in Action Comics 252, about a year, just over a year after the first Legion story. Brainiac, the Bottle City of Kandor.
Okay, so we get the point. He was important.
Yeah. So then he creates this. He basically creates this little team and kind of leaves it there for other people to pick up the ball. And a lot of people did, including Jerry Siegel, and also Edmund Hamilton. And Ed Hamilton, he kind of really shepherded them through sort of the big growth of the Legion. And so we started off with where the only three that we knew about were Lightning Lad, Lightning Boy.
Exactly.
Yes.
He had his name on his shirt.
They all did. Yeah, Cosmic Boy and Saturn Girl. And Darren, if you want to get into a bit of the detail on the costumes.
Sure. Cosmic Boy actually wore a fishbowl on his head. Because that was cool back then. He was apparently an alien. We find out later they all were aliens to Earth. But he had that 1950s, the astronaut swoosh knot, you know, like the George Jetson is what I call it. That kind of look to his outfit. Saturn Girl was wearing green, yellow, and black in her first outfit. And then that quickly was gotten rid of in favor of red, white, and yellow for the Saturn. And then Lightning Boy, I believe he was wearing red in his first. And then it actually went to a blue cape and a blue and white with the lightning bolts on his chest. Mm-hmm. And they all lost the names on their chest after their first or second appearance very quickly.
It was interesting, though, because those costumes did reappear later.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They always rehash things in Legion. Legion is one of those little happy plot devices that got Superboy and Supergirl out of humdrum Smallville where they were and into the future where they could do more hardcore sci-fi fantasy stories, at least by those standards.
And with those costumes, you know, the Saturn Girl costume would later Steve Lytle actually used that design for the Fatal Five member Mentalla. So basically, that was the costume that he used as an homage to Saturn Girl's original costume. And of course, we would see it in the 5 year later run when they were forming the Legion, where they were looking over different costume designs and they had those ones and they're like, hey, I really like the names on the chest.
No. Went away. No.
Well, don't you know ESO t-shirts have those?
Yeah. Well, you know, we've been meaning to talk to you about that.
God damn it.
But then
Think about poor Garth, though. You know, he had Lightning Boy on his shirt, and then he changes his name completely. I mean,
yeah. Lad.
50% of it, Darren. 50%.
Yeah, but giving Superman another LL in his world.
So true. Yeah.
Add him to the list. So, you know. And then we got Triplicate Girl, who later became Duo Damsel, as she was one of the first Legionnaires killed in battle. At least a third of her was killed in battle. We get Phantom Girl, who can turn immaterial. We got a Chameleon Boy, who's basically a shapeshifter, who was the first real alien member looking of the Legion. He was orange-skinned with antenna.
Mm-hmm.
and Colossal Boy and Invisible Kid, and then we get around to when Supergirl joins. It took a while because Supergirl and Superboy unfortunately suffered from what we call the term Legion hazing.
Yes.
Legionnaires gave them all a very hard time about joining their team, even though they went to the trouble of time traveling back to make them join the team. We got Brainiac's Descendant, Brainiac 5. And then we got Ultra Boy, Star Boy, Shrinking Violet, Sun Boy, Bouncing Boy, Mon-El, Matter Eater Lad, Element Lad, Lightning Lass, who became Light Lass and then went back to Lightning Lass, Dream Girl, Pharaoh Lad, Princess Projectra, Karate Kid, Nemesis Kid was a member for two short issues and then became a Legion Traitor. We had take a drink for Legion Traitors. Mm-hmm. Shadow Lass, Chemical King, Timberwolf finally joins after making his appearance like 10 years prior to that point. then Wildfire or Erg One at the time. Tyrock, shut yo mouth.
Yes, I love that costume. It was awesome.
Star, I know, right? Block. Invisible Kid number 2, because Invisible Kid number 1 had since passed away, as had Chemical King at the time. And then we got the White Witch, and then we got Polar Boy actually joins from the Legion of Substitute Heroes. Then Magnetic Kid, Cosmic Boy's kid brother, Quizlet, Tellus, the mysterious Sensor Girl. And then that brings us to the end of the Baxter run, but lots of good stories in there, like the Great Darkness Saga, Earth War, Who is Sensor Girl? The Legion of Superheroes versus the Legion of Supervillains.
The Lecto Saga.
Lots of good fun stories. Lots of great stories.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, when Darren mentioned the Legion hazing, I've been reading some of the early stories with my daughter, and she was quite upset with the way the Legion treated Superboy.
Yeah.
But they went out for ice cream sundaes.
Well, they did, and she liked that. She likes the idea of Martian ice cream because it's apparently out of this world.
Yeah. Oh. It's the best flavor, you know, the Martian ice cream. Best flavor ever.
Everybody says so.
It's made from real Martian Manhunter.
So what was it about the Legion that hooked you and made you, made you fall in love with it and kept going for all three of you? Like, what was it like? Was it the camaraderie? Was it the superhero stuff? The villains? I mean, everything.
Camaraderie in the Legion is a touch and go topic, because right now we're reading some stories on our podcast that the Legion's not really much of a team right now. There's more backbiting and digging at each other than...
Which version of the Legion are you talking
about? We're at the end of the Baxter run.
Yeah. Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, okay. So we're just in the midst of the Emerald Empress story toward the end of that run. I'd say for me, it was you know, again, volume of characters. I can remember the guys that I hung around with that were also reading comics, where our thing was like, how many superheroes can we know about? And so the, you know, for us, team books just made that so much easier. And with the Legion, it was like, yeah, and this character's got this power and he can do this. And we just thought it was the coolest thing. Plus, it was in the future.
Yeah.
And the future seemed like such an awesome place.
They had the coolest stuff. 1,000 years
in the future. Kind of like Star Trek with superpowers.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. That's a perfect example. You know, and I think this when, you know, I thought this, you know, when I was when I went to see the new Star Trek movie, it's like there's some little Legion-y touches. I mean, they're definitely Star Trek touches, but you can see where there was some synergy there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I used to love the space cruiser that Mike Grell created.
Yes.
Oh, amazing stuff.
And had, you know, it had that whole sort of Enterprise vibe to it.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
For me, it was basically, I was reading comics when it was 1982, 83, 84. We could have been blown up at any time. That was very much something that was in the periphery of all of us in the 80s. But the Legion showed that, yes, we'll get our crap together and survive all this. There mm-hmm. will be a future, and it is optimistic, and it's not the dystopia that we see constantly in our sci-fi right now. It was more mm-hmm. of a, we will, I mean, parts of it became dystopic, yes, down the line, but at the time, it was hope for the future is why I kept reading it. Plus, I didn't make an allowance as a kid. So anything I had to buy comics with was me earning it by mowing lawns and things like that. So I needed to buy the comics with the most characters to feel like I was getting my money's worth. I'm not going to buy Batman. It's just Batman. Screw him. I'm going to buy Justice League, Titans, Outsiders, Legion, all those group books so I can get that group dynamic. I mean, yeah, there's something to be said for a broody hero like Batman or even, yeah, obviously Frank Miller's Daredevil run back then and that kind of thing. But for me, it was more bang for the buck. It was economically driven at the end of the day because awesome. I couldn't afford 60 cents for all the comics.
Oh, sure.
That just wasn't going to happen because that you got $5 for mowing a lawn. You can only mow so many lawns in a week.
Yeah.
So, you know, you had to be economical about it.
See, for me, it was – I liked that there were so many characters in it, like you guys had said. And you didn't have to see every single character, every storyline.
Exactly, yeah.
And you had different characters depending what the mission was. And you even had like a sub-squad. You had an espionage squad.
Oh, yeah.
And that was just awesome.
You know, that's a really good point. It's that thing where it feels like by following this one book, it's like I'm following a whole bunch of different books because there are different subsets of teams and that sort of thing. And so, you know, it's that variety.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And there was like high periods of Legion and then there were some really bad ones, periods. And, you know, and it was always something, though, I always looked forward to. And I supported Legion regularly. I picked up everything that they appeared in. And until Legion Lost, that's what put me off.
Which Legion Lost? There have been two.
I know, the New 52.
Ah, did you go three blocks west and then two blocks north?
Exactly.
Because if you did, you'd find the good story.
Such a messy, messy, messy.
Such a messy.
And I was so excited, especially when, you know, the Legion that I knew and grew up with came back in Action Comics. Mm-hmm. With Superman, and it was so good to see
it was
them.
So
again.
Good, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Here's the thing about Legion Lost, and I think this is where they went wrong with it. It's always a really bad idea, in my humble opinion, as a Legion fan, to take the Legion and move them to the 20th century permanently.
Mm-hmm.
Temporary, fine. You know, time travel's their thing; they can do that. But permanently, especially under these vague auspices of we can't be contacting anyone in the current timeline because that would be bad. And then you have guest stars in the second issue.
Exactly.
It's like, really? And then they did a really cool thing where they had a writer change, and then one of the characters, I think it was Gates, went to the future, but it was not their time, not the Legion's timeline future, and the Legion headquarters was destroyed and things had happened, and it suddenly gave the team a purpose to be in the past to change that timeline. And they dropped that. Yeah, they dropped that like a hot potato in favor for the Culling and the Culling Part 2. Never name a story the Culling when you're trying to get readership.
Yeah, because it really described what happened to their fan base at the time.
Totally.
Yeah, it was very disappointing. And you know, the fact that they used the title Legion Lost, which actually had some good sort of cachet to it after the outstanding Abnett and Lanning and Quapel story that they had done in the previous or two incarnations previous, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, it sort of was toward the end of the quote unquote Archie Legion run, and you know that story, the way they told that story, you know, that along with Legion Worlds was just phenomenal. And you get some early Olivier Coipel art in there, which is just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so and that aside, but you know, you had a story where you had these characters that were, you know, really, really depending on each other, being cut off from everything they knew, and that theme should have passed on. You know, you've got these characters, you know, this should be drawing them together, and instead it wasn't. And it was really kind of messy.
It was extremely messy.
Yeah.
And I think part of that was they took Legion Lost and said, hey, you know that show that was on called Lost? Let's kind of make it like that. And so everyone had secret agendas. Everyone was there to do something that they couldn't tell the rest of the team about. And it was really, really a hot mess.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
poor Tyrock. He finally gets his chance to lead the team. And
well, that happened.
Yeah, that happened.
Well, reflecting on now on better things then, on a more positive note, what are some of, like, you know, for those people out there who have little to no experience with the Legion, what are some of the stories that are the highlights for you guys, the ones you recommend?
Let's start with Paul on that one.
Great Darkness Saga, without fail.
Oh, that, very much so. It's actually Keith Giffen at his best.
It really is, and he contributed so much to the storytelling of that. It's also just it's a fantastic starting point because you actually get that you've got a new character that joins at the beginning of that story, and that is Invisible Kid 2. So you kind of get the whole lay of the land explained to you. In a completely non-expository, works for the story way, which is so rare. And so you get introduced to all of these characters and you get to see them go up against the baddest supervillain there is. And my only quibble is that they have to put said villain on the cover of it. And part of the joy of that story was, I wonder who it is. I wonder who it's going to be. Who could this be? And then having that reveal in the penultimate issue. And it was just, wow. So I'd say that's kind of the, if I had to pick one, it would be that one.
Okay. What about you, Darren?
I agree completely with Paul. But I would say that there's actually a hardcover collection of this.
Yes.
And I think it starts at 284, which is the first Paul Levitz story of his run, his second run, and goes through at least 300, maybe a little further. If you read this and don't get your fill of sci-fi, superhero, soap opera, outer space, drama, I can't help you.
Yeah.
This is like the best type of comics ever. You get to see these 30 plus characters. You get to see characters maybe for a panel or two, but you don't need to know anything more about them than what they reveal. Mm-hmm. You know, I think back in the day when we were reading these month to month to month, we got kind of, you know, ooh, what's next? What's next? And now we're so jaded and spoiled, we just go to the internet for the answer for everything.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do that. Buy the book.
It is truly worth it.
And enjoy it. And this is a comic that will keep on giving. I read this at least twice a year. Easily twice a year.
Wow. All right. For me, it's interesting because there's a couple different ones. I love the Earth War storyline, which was awesome. But you have to, for one of them that really had me hooked was the first appearance of Mordru. Back in Adventure Comics. And was just such an awesome story because the Legion are stuck in Smallville back in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great story.
It is such an awesome storyline. And it truly shows the camaraderie between the Legion members. And even showing that Triplet Girl at the time had a crush on Superboy.
Well, Duo Damsel now.
Yeah, it was Duo Damsel by that point.
Yeah.
That story is one of Mark Waid's, and you could go back and listen to our barbecue episode 102. but Mark Waid has said that story is one of his all-time favorite stories, and it is always the thing he checks things against when he's writing. You know, that's kind of he always sort of asks himself, have I done what they did in that story? And, you know, he absolutely loves it. And it is kind of the template for a lot of things that he does. And after I found that out and started looking into some of, you know, reading, reading, rereading some you know, Big Wade's stories, you know, a lot of the stuff in his Flash run, for example, I totally see it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I could totally see that. And for a more recent one is Legion of Three Worlds.
Oh, I love that. It's the only good thing that came out of Final Crisis.
I hear you, sir.
Come on, it was George doing Legion.
Final Crisis is a complete write-off except for that.
Three different versions of the Legion.
I know. And that,
and then get, some.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Some, and that can get confusing for people because the main hump people have to get over with Legion is, and I got into a huge argument last Dragon Con about this with a friend. He didn't want to try Legion because it was just too confusing and too many characters. And I'm like, I'm sorry, you're being lazy.
Yes.
If you like X-Men and can explain to me how many times Jean Grey has been killed and brought back to life and which timeline this is, then you can handle Legion of Superheroes. And there's no reason for you not to. Instead of them being mutants, they're typically from a planet where everybody's got this power.
Exactly.
That's the only really real difference, and they fight xenophobia in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
They're fighting against, you know, alien intolerance, so for the most part. So really, kind of the same book in a different way.
Very true. There's always been comparison between the X-Men and the Legion.
Mm-hmm. So if you can handle the New Mutants, the X-Men, the X-Force, the X-Factors, yeah, you should be reading Legion,
mm-hmm.
without question, and happily reading it.
And not questioning.
No, don't question.
Don't question.
Don't question. Just read.
Don't you dare question.
Nope, not at all.
You know, it's funny, though, because one of the things you guys had mentioned, because you guys used to do your reviews from the Legion archives, which yeah. were the black and white story.
Right.
And it's funny because I picked those up for my son, and we were following along with you guys. And we were like going, wait a minute, which one's Brainiac 5? Because you couldn't tell.
Can't tell.
The green
all
one.
Those Kurt Swan guys look
alike.
I
was just going to say all those Kurt Swan hairstyles.
And Kurt Swan had one look for a guy. It was hair parted on the right. Mm-hmm. That was it.
And I love Kurt. Trust me. I love Kurt.
No, me too.
Kurt is my Superman artist. And
if you didn't see enough of the costume, you were basically screwed on who is that.
Exactly. Oh, wait, he has a force field. That's Brainiac.
That's Brainy. Yeah, we're good.
Who's the ass hat? Oh, that's Brainy also. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny, though. You know, it's kind of cool, though, because, of course, you had her big squee in Supergirl last season when you saw the Legion flight ring in the fortress.
Yeah, looks like that's going to come back this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
And Mon-El is going to be appearing this season.
Yeah, what about that? Poor Mon-El. You know, he's across some lead somewhere.
He's getting thrown in. He's getting thrown in the damn zone. But you know what? I just can't. We live in a world where we get to see Mon-El on freaking TV.
Right.
Well, I think it's a long time coming. I mean, I sometimes wonder if. You know, like if DC just missed out a little bit, because when I was collecting, of course, they came out with the Teen Titans were huge, the new Teen Titans, and then Legion was big. JLA was still pretty good. X-Men over at Marvel was good. But talking about DC now, it seemed like right after that is when, like, you have this explosion of cartoons like G.I. Joe and Transformers with, like, tons of characters.
Yes.
And they're all toys. And I'm like, you know, Legion is a perfect vehicle for that.
Yes. Absolutely.
And yet it never happened. And I'm like, that's, they were just off by maybe like 5 years.
Well, I think DC had
5 years later.
Yeah, 5 years later. DC had most of its contracts tied up with Super Friends, I'm sure.
That could be.
You know, where, hey, this is where your DC properties are. You come see Hanna-Barbera if you want permission to do it.
And you know, and it wasn't until the success of, you know, Batman the Animated Series and when they started saying to Bruce Timm, hey, here's the keys, take it for a spin. And then, you know, in Justice League Unlimited, we got to see everyone, including the Legion. And, you know, that Legion story in Justice League Unlimited is one of my favorites. You know, it's just such a perfect, you know, it's a perfect explanation of those characters. First of all, it's an excellent use of them, and it's just that, all that aside, just a fantastic story. And you know, that's kind of the thing, like, you know, and yeah, I think, you know, I think you're right. I think at the time their animation properties were a mess. You know, it was just Super Friends and that
thing else.
Yeah. And you know, and you had, you know, like you had, so you had like the Filmation Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And the Superman that was out at the time, but that was it, you know.
Justice League is Unlimited. So was that the first appearance of like the Legion at all in anything?
No. There was
outside, like in another medium?
There was an episode of Superman the Animated Series where they had them in that too, where they told a Superboy story.
Oh, go. Okay, gotcha. But yeah, but before yeah. before the Bruce Timm stuff.
No, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Like that and that's the crazy thing, isn't it? You know, that they had this property that was a hot property for a good time.
Yeah.
And you know, I used having children as an excuse for me to get myself a bunch of cartoon DVDs.
And, you use that and one so, too, huh?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. It's, you know, it's for the kids,
of course.
But one of the ones I got was those old, and like I remember growing up, you
I'm,
know. In
the, I'm trying to get that one with my pop figures. Go telling Judy, nice. It's for William.
Nice. Exactly, right? And so I can remember, you know, when I was 7 or 8, one of the Buffalo stations would every morning have superhero cartoons, and you'd have, you know, Aquaman, the Atom, the Flash, Superman, Superboy, and, you know, the Superman and Superboy ones always ended with the wink to the quote-unquote uh-huh. camera. And so I believe those were all Filmation as well. And so I got those. Now, I gotta say, I love that there are cartoons that have the Flash and the Atom and all the and Hawkman and all these different heroes that my kid can watch, and she totally digs them. But I watched a couple of them with her, and it's like, wow, this stuff did not age well.
No, it did not.
Mm-mm. And but when you look at the stuff that when Bruce and even the Super Friends stuff, some of it ages better than others, but most of it, it's a tough watch. But man, when you get into that Timverse stuff, it just holds up. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, from the earliest Batman animated series cartoons through to the animated movies. You know, I had a friend texting me the other day. He's like, "Why don't they let the animation?" Because he just watched a bunch of them. He's like, "Why don't they let the animation?" Guys do all the movies. And I replied back to him, it's like, yeah, thanks for joining the conversation the rest of us have been having for years.
It's true.
Well, they did have a Legion cartoon, though.
They did. Superman.
Yes.
And Legion of Superheroes, because we were in a lawsuit at the time.
Yeah.
With the Siegel family and I think the Schusters as well. I could be wrong, but definitely the Siegels. It was a fun cartoon.
Yes, it was.
It consisted on 6 or 7 members of the Legion, plus you had to have the big red S in there. And it was a great set of cartoons, and they had 2 seasons, and it was fun, and I wish they could have done more.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly.
Because that second season, they were really building to something there.
Yeah, they were. They had planned for season 3 would introduce even more characters that hadn't been introduced yet. So, you know, you go 2 seasons, and you haven't introduced all the Legionnaires yet. You know, you've got some work to do still. It's really, you know, that's a big cast to talk about and talk to and get all the relationships down. So, yeah. Well, we're waiting for that Legion Great Darkness Saga DC animated movie to come out.
Which would be amazing.
But it won't come out because Batman's not in it.
So true.
It'll be Batman and the Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah. Yeah. Which there have been Batman and the Legion of Superheroes stories.
It'll turn into the Great Dark Knight Saga.
Exactly. And if it doesn't have Batman in it, no, it'll have Batman in it. But they'll also somehow try and shoehorn Cyborg into it.
Cyborg and Katana.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, they had the two animated directed DVD releases, which had Karate Kid and Dawn Star in a very Super Friends tied up feature, which had in it.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
And then they also had
that seems so random.
It was
it does, but that's because basically Dawnstar was Super Chief and Karate Kid. Apache Chief, sorry, Super Chief. Funny company. and what's it called?
Karate Kid was Samurai's.
Samurai, that's it. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. Then you also, of course, had Legion show up on Smallville.
Yeah, best ever Legion appearance yet, I think, to date. Partially because it's live action.
Right.
I mean, the animated is great, but to see them actually in the flesh, that's pretty trippy.
Deal. It was a big deal for the Legion to get to be on primetime TV.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's why this Mon-El thing is so cool. Yeah, and a fight ring. They showed a damn fight ring.
Well, you did see a flight ring, didn't you, when Flash was going through to Earth 2?
Yeah. Exactly.
The Flash thing and in Supergirl.
Yes.
That Flash thing, that was the first flight ring appearance, and then followed up shortly after by the one in the Fortress. So we end up with that connection as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because to me, my Legion includes Kal-El.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I
thanks, Crisis.
Yeah, right?
Thank you, John Byrne. Dear God.
Well, I was going to ask that because that does seem to be another controversy as well. Not controversy, but something that's debatable, whether or not, you know, some like it with Superboy, some like it without Superboy, some like their Legion stories with Supergirl. You know, Geoff Johns had a pretty good story with Superman. Mm-hmm.
Let me explain something to you, Gordon.
Absolutely.
Are you ready? Let me explain something to you. The big red S sells comics.
Oh, sure. No, I get that. But
so
as far
you
as
gotta being, have that together.
As far as being a Legion fan, do you guys have any preference?
Yeah, mine. You know, it always. You know, he doesn't even have to be there to be there. That's the thing. Is that when Superman was the influence, you know, he was the inspiration for the Legion, as opposed to later on when they said, oh, it was the Justice League. No, but when it was Superman who was the, you know, Superman and, in fact, Superboy, because the idea was, see, when he was a teenager, he was doing this. You guys can do this. Even when he wasn't in the book, his presence was felt. Mm-hmm. When he was taken out as a member, that was no longer a thing, and that was it's just not the same.
Yeah,
and
it was replaced with that generic loving of the Justice League.
Yeah, you know, the idea, you know, and I think part of it is the optimism of Superman / Superboy as a character. You know, when there is that. You know, that is an optimistic character, no two ways about it. And when, you know, that being kind of one of the big, that optimism being one of the big things about the Legion, you know, one of those big themes that it's like, yeah, see, everything's going to be good. And that's something that really plays well. And so, yeah, even when he wasn't in that story, you know, he was still part of who they were. And I think that when that got pulled out, and I mean, to be fair, they had an easy out and didn't take it. And so instead we had the Pocket Universe stuff.
Oh, yep. It was better than Reflecto. Come on.
Yeah, it was Reflecto all over again.
Exactly.
Pretty much, yeah. But no, I mean, you know, this idea, you know, because there's a great interview with Byrne around shortly after that time where he said that they were sitting in a meeting and he was saying and Levitz is sitting there and he's saying, so this is really going to affect you. And Levitz, we're fine. And then he says, like, because
he's not going to have been Superboy. But that's okay, because, you know, after 1,000 years, you know, the stories get told kind of differently, and they figure he was, he did this from when he was a kid. And so, you know, that's just a part of the legend that they've got wrong. And Levitt says, no, we don't need to go that way. No, no. And then all of a sudden it was, oh, crap, there's no Superboy. We have to do something about that.
Uh-huh.
And so we got the pocket universe.
And then you got some guaranteed comic book dickery, if I may use a phrase, that said you couldn't even mention anything about the Superman universe in a Legion comic.
Yeah, that was...
So you couldn't even say the Daily Planet?
Yeah.
Really? The Daily Planet is a mainstay of the DC universe. Why do you mean I can't use that?
At least they let the Legion stay in Metropolis. Come on.
I'm actually
stopped using the name after a while, and then they eventually blew up.
They blew it up. they were like, you can't use it, so they blew up the whole damn planet.
First, they blew up the moon.
Yes, in Superman.
Yep, and then they blew up Earth. So it's like, really? Okay, fine. Yes. Watch me erase all this.
Exactly.
Literal scorched earth.
Exactly. Yeah, or as my friend said, oh, look at them trying to go after the environmentalists. Yeah.
But they had, you know, the thing with that was it did get pretty contentious between the Legion editorial office, which at the time one of the editors was Mark Waid, and the Superman office. And they were basically like, you're saying Devlin O'Ryan works for the Daily Planet? Well, you can't say that because that's ours. What if we decide to destroy the Daily Planet? Yeah, because no one would ever bring back that name again. And so they couldn't call it that. And this is why we ended up with the great continuity punch and Mon-El retroactively becoming the inspiration for the Legion, because
wait, not Mon-El. Valor.
No.
Oh, I was getting there.
He was Mon-El when the Great Continuity Punch happened.
Yes, yes. And then became Valor, who was the retroactively the Seeder of Planets.
He got around a lot.
See, Mon-El had too many personalities in his body for one Daxamite to hold, so he just had to let all that love out. Just let it all out.
It's an interesting question, because I do know, and to Darren's point, when I was a lapsed reader from Legion, the book that I distinctly remember that brought me in back in was 280, with Superboy rejoining the Legion Superheroes with a beautiful George Perez cover.
Wasn't it?
And it's still one of my favorite covers.
Yeah.
Wasn't that still Dick O'Ard inside, though?
Yeah,
I think so. But
it's a total tease.
Yeah, well, he was doing Titans at the time.
Yeah,
so, yeah,
but he did covers on the Legion for a spell, and then he moved on to do covers for the Justice League. Yeah, but that particular cover for 280 is just beautiful, beautiful stuff.
But it was awesome though, because right after that though, that's when Pat Broderick came on board.
Yeah,
and that's when I feel like the Legion was reborn. And because Pat went right into Keith, and then the whole thing with the Great Darkness Saga.
Well, and it was Levitz coming in with Broderick and basically coming into that book and saying, man, because he feels that he really whiffed it the first time around. You know, we actually spoke to him and he told us, like, yeah, it was not. You know, he says it got away from me. I didn't have the time to give it its due. And so, I asked to be taken off the book at the time. And then they came to me and said, we want you to do it again. And he's like, really? Because I kind of messed it up before. And so he was bound and determined to give, you know, because the Legion was something he was a fan of as a kid. You know, he remembers reading all that Ed Hamilton stuff. And he was like, I'm not messing it up this time. I've got to go big.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, and he did go big. He really went big.
Well, you know, there's a great story about with the Great Darkness Saga, when the hardcover came out. He went to he actually sent a letter to one of his you know, inspiring creative writing teachers that when he was a kid going to school in Brooklyn. And, you know, he said, I finally made the bestseller list. And so this was kind of a big deal for him to talk to his mentor about this. And that mentor was actually Frank McCourt, who wrote Angela's Ashes. Mm. And so it was, you know, and I just love that. Like this is a guy, you know, at the time in his late 50s. And he's like, I showed my teacher that I got a bestseller. And, you know, as much as we like to think that people in the comic book business get jaded, it just shows a true Legion fan still has that optimism and the hey, I did it.
All right. Let me ask you guys this now. Let's go fast forward. What do you think the future is now for the Legion?
We have rumblings. Legion's not being published currently. There was a tease of a certain character in DC's Rebirth number one. Mm-hmm. And we believe that tease is going to lead to something grand down the way. But DC's being smart. Yes, I said that. About they're resetting all their characters and getting them back in line. Because when they did their New 52, it lost the joy of the universe. They totally went in favor of making everything grim and gritty, and the more shocking the final page could be, the better to get your readers to tune in next time and all this jazz. And it fell flat, because when you write everyone as Batman, because that's what they were basically doing with a few exceptions, it's boring, frankly. And when you have characters acting one way in their solo books and completely differently in a team book, yeah, there's team dynamics, but still, this should be the same person at the end of the day. And they're acting completely different from each other. There was no cohesiveness in the universe anymore. And there's a certain level of editorial control that has to take place, but then there's a certain amount of writing creativity that has to take place. And they finally listened to the fans, or their sales, depending upon which way you want to phrase it, and said, oh, we got to fix this. Because they were slumping in the sales really badly. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, we get it. We need to go back to at least some parts of the old universe and putting, I don't want to say a sense of joy into it, but a sense of hope. I found no one in the DC universe after the New 52, and I read for about 8 months before I said, you know what, I'm kind of done right now. I'm kind of burned out, and I can't look at this from an objective viewpoint anymore. There was no one worth saving in the DC universe. Everybody was an asshole. Why would heroes save these people? Let's just take a step back and look at them. When you begin to agree more with the villains, yeah, this world would be better off without these people. Let's do it. That's a problem on a superhero level, I think.
Oh, sure. No, that makes sense completely, because they weren't fun. It was like – and I felt bad because Paul had brought back Legion. And especially after what Geoff Johns had done with it. Mm-hmm. And then the New 52 came right up following it. Mm-hmm. And right in the middle of a storyline of anything.
Yeah. And which totally ruined the momentum of the book.
Exactly. Totally ruined it. And it never was able to pick up from that.
And they'd been struggling
previously.
You know, and that was but that was the industry as a whole was struggling. And So the, you know, that previous volume had struggled. And then, you know, I think Francis Portella is a phenomenal artist. I don't think he was the right guy for that book at launch. And, Ildare Sinar seemed to really have something going on, but they were basically, well, that book wasn't selling so well, so we can't put him on it.
Yeah.
And so he got shuttled over to Firestorm. And
Phil did some great stuff in Adventure Comics with the Legion Academy.
Oh, yes.
That was the best Legion book going at the time.
Yeah.
Phil Jimenez's run on that. So I would definitely recommend someone pick that up, because mm-hmm. that was a fun little run. But it didn't last. And it just petered out.
Mm-hmm.
Completely petered out. And then we hear Keith Giffen's going to reunite with Paul Levitz. It was like, ooh, yes, finally. Everyone got apoplectic, including myself. Yes, let's do it. Let's see what it's about. And it was, quite honestly, horrible. Some of the worst Legion stories I've ever read.
No, I have to agree with you on that one.
And it was heartbreaking. It's absolutely heartbreaking. And we laugh about some of it now. But at the time, as a Legion fan, I was completely disheartened with the book was going out like this.
Yeah.
Because Legion was always about hope. And those last five issues were nothing about hope. You can give me a 4 or 5 page epilogue after all those characters just went through? No. There was nothing hopeful about that. I was like, okay, yeah, we're going to put this idea to bed for a while because we just really ran it through the ringer. And then they replaced it with Justice League 3000. It's like, oh, okay, so Justice League 3000 is the new Legion. So it felt like the whole property had been erased and replaced by the Justice League name because it was selling. Justice League was selling books.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a business. At the end of the day, no matter what, it's a business. And so, okay, Justice League is selling books. Yay. That's all you got for us. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
And they've hinted at stuff with the Legion in that book.
They have. They have toyed with it greatly.
Yes.
They have indeed, but still not Legion.
That turns into a fun little book, but yeah, it's still a completely different animal.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like they brought back Justice League, Bwahaha.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In a way.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, I want to see a good, solid Legion book back.
And Paul and I have advocated many times for, we don't want the Legion back until they have the game plan ready. We want this to be a solid book when it comes back. We don't want it to be published for 6 issues and then go away.
And I don't want to see Legion 90210.
No. And you want someone who you want a level of commitment to it in that we're going to put this team on it and we're going to kind of let them go with it. You know, like for example, when they tried bringing them back in Justice League United, it was a messy thing. And you know, the writer of that book was Jeff Lemire, who I know for a fact is a huge Legion fan. And a lot of that was taken out of his hands. And it was a really, really tough experience for him doing that. And I think, you know, he feels that, you know, this was his chance to do the Legion. And it was a horrible experience for him. And so that needs to be a thing, too, where it's like, let someone come up with their pitch for it and let them roll with it. And, you know, stop trying to shoehorn it into a whole bunch of bits of continuity that no one really cares about.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. That's a good way to put it. So we've been talking for about an hour and
an hour.
Yeah, I know. We could keep on going for a bit. But you know, if you want to hear more Legion talk, these guys are the experts on it, folks. I wouldn't look elsewhere. These guys do, like they said, a weekly show on it. And, man, I'm enjoying this. I could keep on going. So this is just awesome. So let's take a quick break, though, and we will be back in a moment with the Con Report.
Oh, Superman. Oh, John. Oh, Mom and Dad. Mom and Dad.
Welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Con Report.
And it's time for Dragon Con. Yes, this weekend.
You know you're going to lose your voice if you keep on doing that.
You know I'm going to lose my voice anyway. So it's, like I said, I'm practicing the throat just to try to get ready for the volume. Because if that takes you by surprise, then, you know, you'll cut out within hours. But in any case, Dragon Con, it's what we've been working for this entire year, literally, because we've had episodes of the ESO Dragon Con Report all year round. Starting in January, we just had and released our last one. And again, thank you for everybody who sent us messages to be part of that show. Really came together well. Thanks, Mike, for your editing on that. So it's great fun. Lots of great ideas of what to do. I mean, if you already don't know what to do at Dragon Con and you're looking for some ideas, listen to that show, because that'll help you out a lot. We've got a lot of good friends promoting a lot of fun stuff and looking forward to seeing everybody there. ESO has a lot of events happening in and of themselves. We have Thursday ESO meetup, right? That's Thursday night?
Yes, sir, at 10 p.m.
10 p.m.
Yes.
So you can watch the wrestling and then go upstairs and hang out with ESO.
Exactly. We'll be at the 22 Story Bar.
Absolutely. And we may or may not have buckets of rum.
We'll see how watered down they are this year.
And then I don't think there's anything officially ESO related on Friday. Saturday, I believe, is when we're recording the next episode of ESO. We're recording that live as part of the American Sci-Fi Classics track, and we are taking a look at a beloved movie 30 years old
this year. Feed me, Seymour.
Absolutely. Little Shop of Horrors, the musical adaptation. We will be taking a look at that, and we're going to have a lot of fun. We've got some panelists on there. Look, it's part of the Sci-Fi Classics track, so that is a amazingly fun track to be part of. So it's going to be a good show. So we hope to deliver that to you guys. So those people who cannot be at Dragon Con will still get a glimpse of some of the shenanigans that happened there based on that panel. And then on Sunday, we'll be recording our ESO Dragon Con report live from Dragon Con. So you're going to hear a lot of familiar voices in that. And then Monday, we're going to recover. No, Monday is still the con still going on. And then we come home, and then Tuesday we crash, and it's going to be heartbreaking for us. But Monday, more importantly, is ESW. We are recording an ESW live event show that is going to be with myself, of course, Mike, and Mary Ogle is coming over to join us for that show. So we're going to have a blast. I mean, I'm really anxious to meet Mary. That's going to be a fun time. Unfortunately, our co-host Jennifer couldn't make the con due to other commitments, but we do have the Geek Girls take, which you've heard Angela every week on this show. So if you are interested in meeting Angela Pritchett, then please come to the ESW panel, because she will be there with us then.
Yes. And I'm actually going to put this out there that, you know, we're going to be talking about your favorite companion and what makes a good companion on Doctor Who. Come prepared to try to figure out which member of the ESW crew actually could be a good companion.
Ha! Well, that's, yeah. Yeah, okay. We'll go there. Look, the panels are all fun. Mike has other panels that he's doing. Mike, what's any highlights? Because how many panels are you doing this year?
Right now.
Are you in the double digits?
Of course I am.
Of course.
Don't be ridiculous. Actually, this is a slow year for me. I'm only doing 12.
12.
Exactly. And there's 11 on the schedule and one that's off schedule. So we'll have a total of 12 panels throughout the weekend. But it's actually, I've got a lot of free time. So I'm going to probably go pop up at other panels or hang out with some folks over at Artist Alley and such.
Awesome.
But there's also a lot of music this year I want to go see.
Well, and you can definitely find out both Mike's schedule and my schedule, as well as anybody on ESO, by going using the ESO app. Mike and I are both guests, so you can look under speakers. I think that's what it has us listed under. And you can find out our whole schedule. I will be on 5 panels. I'm not nearly as ambitious as my co-host there, but I will also be at my table in Artist Alley most of the time. And I will have Tiki Zombie 3 there with me. So that's a new thing. So hopefully people can come by and check that out. And we're also going to be doing a raffle. Anybody who purchases Tiki Zombie 3 will get put in for a raffle. We'll be raffling off a nice barrel head print painting of the cover for Tiki Zombie 3. Come take a look at it because I'll have a few of those for sale as well. They're gorgeous. So I'm going to give away one to a lucky fan. And that'll be – we're actually giving it away on Sunday. But so you'll have till from Friday to Sunday to get a ticket to win one of those. And just come by and say howdy, even if you don't want to buy anything, because that's one place that you'll be sure to find me anyway. Mike will be running around.
I'll be everywhere. Everywhere with my camera.
So it's going to be a great time. We hope to see you all there. If you're going to be there, you know what a blast it's going to be. And yes, please let's figure out a way, you know, through the app or through social media or leaving notes at my table or whatever. Let's find a way to meet up, because one thing I hate finding out about, or, you know, one thing about Dragon Con that I hate is afterwards when you're like, oh, I never got to see you this year, even if it's for 5-10 minutes. I love just visiting with people, so especially our listeners. So please reach out to us. And if you're really sick of us talking about Dragon Con, of course, we're not going to stop. We'll be doing a post-Dragon Con report for September. But, you know, this is after this week and airing of the panels and everything, then it'll be pretty much over for a few months until we gear up for next year's Dragon Con. So you'll have a few months of a reprieve from that. So, but if there's a convention that's out there that's near and dear to your hearts, like Dragon Con is to ours, please reach out to us, because we love talking about conventions. We want to hear about your convention experience. If you're putting on a convention, we want to hear about your convention, we can help you promote that. If we can help you with panels and just organize some stuff, we have experience with that too. So
exactly. If you want to sponsor us, we'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely. So yeah, please reach out to us, because we love talking about conventions, especially Dragon Con.
Dun, dun, dun. So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. I want to thank our guests for joining us. Of course, Paul, you made it through your first episode with us.
I did. I've survived.
And we didn't even get you in the geek seat this time.
Oh.
Darren still has the marks on him.
Like, oh.
I like marks though. So yeah,
exactly.
I also like Steve's and Jim's.
The SO marks. Oh god. Oh boy. Okay, Paul, anything you want to promote or shout out about?
Well, for those who haven't heard our show, it is you can find it at legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com.
Awesome. And you guys are up on iTunes and many other places.
Yes.
Yes.
All of the places.
The places. Can they hear like a lot of the older shows or just more of the recent ones up there?
No, we've got a little gap.
We have a five-year gap.
A gap in the 200s, but it's not a 5-year gap, but yeah. But in the 200s, there are some that I'm still working on getting added back to the feed. But no, there's stuff going back, like I say, eight years. And certainly some of the big interviews that we've done, like Levitz and Mark Wade, Francis Manipole, all those guys. Phil Jimenez, yeah. You know, those episodes are all up.
Okay.
So plenty to listen to and to follow along with.
Fantastic. All right. And Darren.
Ditto.
Okay. Wow. Okay. That's Darren. So he's saying thank you for being on the show. Okay.
I'll be at Dragon Con in the Wonder Warrior get up. So all you single gay guys come find me.
There you go.
Is that better?
That's better.
Okay.
All right. And of course, Mr. Mike, can you beat that one?
No. As always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you want to shout out about, sir?
I do. Dan Allen Plexico, part of the ESO podcast, put out the episode 105 of the White Rocket podcast, which is our second part two look at the band Led Zeppelin. It looks like at this rate that we're going, it's going to be maybe 6-7 episodes. But I was on with Van Allen Plexico, of course, the host, as well as Aaron Smith and Kel Carpenter. We discussed albums 3, 4, and Houses of the Holy, and had a lot of fun doing so. So and
slowly they're climbing the stairway to heaven. It's awesome. As
we're getting there. We're getting there. It's great fun to talk about. So, and those are great guys to talk about it with. So please tune into that.
Excellent.
Nice.
Very fun. My shout out real quick is going to a TV show called The Bluegrass Underground. It is a concert venue in Tennessee that is in a cavern, and they do rock, they do country, they do blues, and it's now a PBS show. And well, it's been a PBS show, I should say. I just discovered it after we actually went to the actual location. And they are starting season 7, starting on the 7th of September. You can find it on your local public broadcasting channel. It's just amazing, the type of music and the acoustics in a cavern.
Mm.
You're 300 feet underground. So it's pretty awesome. So it's definitely worth checking out, and it's going to be a fun season. So I definitely would recommend people checking that one out. So I guess the next time we come to you, we will be coming to you from Dragon Con. Yes, that's right, folks. We are going to be very hoarse probably the next time we talk to you. And you'll be hearing from us for our live recording that we're doing for our next episode of Earth Station 1. We are doing Little Shop of Horrors. We're going to look at the 30th anniversary of the show. So it should be a lot of fun, and we might even do a sing-along. So
nice.
Yeah. So, you know, a sing-along on a podcast, can't beat that.
Are we going to dress up like the urchins?
You can if you'd like.
I said we.
Oh, we.
You, me, and Gordon. No.
Okay. In sequence? Of course.
Of course.
Of course.
Is there any other way to do it? I don't think so.
Mm-mm. Definitely not. As we go, yeah, I'm not going to start singing. I almost did. I almost did. I almost broke into song there. But we also, of course, you'll probably get a bonus episode with the ESO network recording, which is always a fun adventure.
To be pie soaked.
Yeah, oh God. All right. And so it should be a lot of fun. So if you come see us at the con, please stop by and say howdy. We would love to see you. And, you know, we want to hear from you guys. Like we always mention throughout the show, write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. We would definitely love to hear from you guys. And, you know, what is your thoughts on Legion? What is your thoughts on Dragon Con? What were your thoughts on the passing of Gene Wilder? We want to hear all about it from you guys. And, you know, we will play you up on the show if you leave a recording. So with that being said, friend us up on the Dragon Con app for all you guys who are into smartphones and are going to be at the con. You can find all our schedules up there. So until then, my name is Mike Faber. It's always been awesome to talk to you guys. And we'll see you next time here on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace. And we're done.
Hit it!
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits? Different types who wear a day coat, pants with stripes, or cutaway coat, perfect fits. Dressed up like a $1 million trooper, trying mighty hard to look like Gary Cooper.
Uber, Uber!
Come let's mix where Rockefellers walk with sticks or Umbrellas in their midst.
chocolate, but that's just the beginning. We have to get on, we have so much time and so little to do. Strike that, reverse it. This way, please. We'll take the Wonkavator. Step in, Charlie. Grandpa Jones, sir.
This is the great glass Wonkavator.
It's an elevator.
It's a Wonkavator. An elevator can only go up and down, but the Wonkavator can go sideways and slantways and long ways and back ways and square ways and front ways and any other ways that you can think of. It can take you to any room in the whole factory just by pressing one of these buttons. Any of these buttons. Just press a button and zing! You're off. And up until now, I've pressed them all. Except one. This one. Go ahead, Charlie.
Me?
There it goes. Hold on tight. I'm not exactly sure what's going to happen.
Faster, faster. If we don't pick up enough speed, we'll never get through.
Get through what?
You mean we're going...
up and out.
But this roof is made of glass. It'll shatter into 1,000 pieces. We'll be cut to ribbons.
Probably. Hold on, everybody. Here it comes!
You did it, Mr. Wonka! Congratulations!
Get up, take a look.
Grandpa, our town looks so pretty from up here.
Yeah, look over here, Charlie. I think I see our house.
Wow!
It really looks beautiful.
There's my school, Grandpa.
How did you like the chocolate factory, Charlie?
I think it's the most wonderful place in the whole world.
I'm very pleased to hear you say that, because I'm giving it to you. That's all right, isn't it?
You're giving Charlie the...
I can't go on forever, and I don't really want to try. So, who can I trust to run the factory when I leave and take care of the Oompa Loompas for me? Not a grown-up. A grown-up would want to do everything his own way, not mine. That's why I decided a long time ago that I had to find a child. A very honest, loving child to whom I can tell all my most precious candy-making secrets.
And that's why you sent out the golden tickets.
That's right. So the factory's yours, Charlie. You can move in immediately.
And me?
Absolutely.
What happens to the rest?
The whole family. I want you to bring them all. But Charlie, don't forget what happened to the man who suddenly got everything he always wanted.
What happened?
He lived happily ever after.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.